Welcome to tonight's show. If you watch other TV stations, if you listen to other radio stations, if you go on social media, the people in this room with me tonight do not exist. In fact, as you can see, they're real, they're flesh and blood, they are your fellow citizens, and they represent hundreds of thousands of other people in every corner of these islands, and millions more around the globe. Yet if they post on Twitter, if they post on Facebook, they are labeled as misleading, as disinformation, and as fake news. These people are not in the least bit fake. They are victims of the COVID vaccines. Some of them have lost husbands, have lost parents, have lost children to these vaccines. Others among us are now chronically injured. They can't work, they can't drive, they're faced with the prospect of having to sell their homes in order to pay medical bills. They're real, and they have been shamefully treated, not only by the state, and by that I don't just mean the Queen's ministers, but Her Very Majesty herself told these people that we should all take the vaccine. Then we have the media, who have just ignored this story. I don't just mean the pom-pom girls of Good Morning Britain that you would expect to be content to serve as propagandists, but the so-called butch boys like Kevin O'Sullivan, to his shame, at talk radio, who dismissed these people as yesterday's news. They're not yesterday's news. They're very much today's news. If you don't follow the news, I don't blame you, because on the COVID vaccine stuff, it's getting worse. In the United States, they're jabbing six-month-old babies. In Australia, the New South Wales health minister is berating the double vaccinated for being insufficiently enthusiastic about getting a third jab in the arm. In Canada, Justin Trudeau has said that you have to get jabbed in order to enjoy life as a citizen of a free society. You have to get jabbed every 9 months. These people are the consequences of one of the worst public policies anywhere on earth in modern times. And we are going to tell their stories. That's coming up on tonight's show. It's special with a group of people that for most of the last year and a half, there's been no public acknowledgement that they even exist. But just a couple of weeks ago, the government of the United Kingdom finally admitted that the COVID vaccines can kill you. They can injure you chronically so that you're not able to work again. And they agreed to compensate people up to £120,000 for the loss of their loved ones or the loss of their livelihood. We're going to be talking to victims of these vaccines for the next hour. They are something extraordinary in public policy. Never before has anyone invented a medicine that all 7.5 billion people on the planet are supposed to take. The head of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, this is the time to growl. Klaus Schwab is the sinister Teutonic megalomaniac hiding in plain sight as a sinister Teutonic megalomaniac. Come on, give us a growl. And, and he said the other day, Novan is safe until everybody is vaccinated. These people did as they were told. They took the vaccine, and within days, some of them had lost loved ones, and others found themselves sick, unable to work, and once rare diseases like Guillain-Barré disease. Suddenly, a handful of cases show up in a small Lancashire hospital all at one time. We're going to talk to some friends whom you've seen on the show before. And we also have here Dan Wootton, who's Dan is really here in place of a Scottish friend of ours who was on your show and who can't be with us tonight because he's actually been stricken by COVID. He's doubly cursed. He was wrecked by the vaccines and he got COVID anyway, Dan.
Yes, poor Alex Mitchell, who obviously lost his leg as a direct result of his injuries from the AstraZeneca jab. And I think all of the people in this room, Mark, are extraordinary. They have been through some of the worst months that anyone could imagine. They've lost relatives, they've lost body parts, they've lost the use of their body. But the most disgraceful thing for me, and the thing that I think is unforgivable, is they have been ignored by the political establishment, but most crucially for me, by our colleagues, Mark, journalists and broadcasters who have thought this is an inconvenient part of the narrative and simply have ignored the people in this room. And I just think all of them are so brave because they've had to put up with being dismissed in so many ways by their loved ones, by their MPs, apart from one honourable exception who I know you'll get to later, and by the media. So thank you to you, Mark, because you in the UK have put this issue on such a pedestal and it deserves to be there because this is a national scandal.
Why do you think that was, though, Dan? Was it just because it was presented to us as a fairy tale? Oh, this killer virus is on the loose, but we have the best brains in the world and they are going to invent something that will make it go away. I mean, that's an obviously ludicrous narrative to buy into, and yet most of the media did.
Well, there was one narrative, wasn't there? And the narrative was, we have this great vaccine rollout, and that's the only way to open up the country. Now, personally, I don't think we ever needed a great vaccine rollout to open up the country. The country should never have been shut down. But that is the narrative that the media got into. Some of our biggest newspapers in the country actually started to actively campaign for the government to jab the entire country. And so what that means is they don't want to look at these facts. They don't want to look at these victims in the room because it doesn't fit the narrative that they have helped the government to push. And by the way, that's not to say that there may have been benefits for some people for having the vaccine. And you can have that conversation, but the problem is they don't want to have that conversation, as you know, because they're still campaigning, even now, the BBC, still campaigning for young folk to be jabbed.
Mm-hmm. Well, the vaccines, the claims made for them have just shrunk week on week. A year ago, we were told it was 95% effective. It would stop you getting the virus and it would stop you passing it on. That would be impressive if it were true. Mm-hmm. And then it deteriorated and it became, oh, well, yeah, you'll still get it and you'll still pass it on to people, but you won't be hospitalized. And that turned out not to be true. Then they said, well, you won't get a serious version that will kill you. And that turned out not to be true. 75% of the deaths in this country at the time they stopped collecting them, were among the triple vaccinated. Dan, you are always honest about these things. The stories, and they're not really stories, they're life. It's your life, are heartbreaking. We have with us, we should first introduce the victim of the vaccine. This is Stephen Wright. He was a doctor. And poor Charlotte here was married to Stephen, the love of her life. They've got two small sons, and Charlotte is a widow at 32. It's anyone who's lost the love of their life knows it's a tough break to be widowed when you're 92, but to lose half a century you were entitled to is terrible. And next to Charlotte, we have Stephen's mother, Annie. And we all know it to lose, for a parent to outlive a child, offends against the natural order. And to lose a talented man like that at 32 is just an awful thing. Tell us a bit about your son, Annie.
My name's Anne, actually. I just use Annie on
Twitter. Oh, do you just use Annie on Twitter? Okay.
My name's Anne.
Sorry, I've been overly intimate now. I went straight to Annie and no one's ever called you that before. I do apologise.
Actually, my brothers do.
Oh, your brothers do. Oh, okay. Okay.
I can't say was because he's my son. Stephen is an amazing person. He was kind. He was caring. He was funny, he was a great son, he was a great husband, great brother, great dad, and he was just everything anyone should be. He just was just a perfect person. And I know he had his faults, you know, like anyone, but he was
not
just...
many.
No, he was just amazing. He loved the children he worked for. He loved his job as a clinical psychologist. And he really cared about the children he was and young people that he was looking after. And he took the jab because he thought he would be protecting them because they were vulnerable. Yeah. And he thought, you know, he had no fear for himself because he was young, he was fit, he was healthy, he was only 32. And it turned out, you know, within 10 days he had died of the vaccine. And it's, like you say, it's just the cruelest thing for a mother to lose, and a father, my husband as well, and his sister, and to Charlotte and his sons. No. It's just so cruel.
Such a terrible thing. A talented man. He'd just taken a job at Great Ormond Street Hospital. Yes. And he has the distinction, according to at least one doctor who knew him, of being the first person on the planet to die of the COVID vaccine.
Yes.
How do you feel? Because I'm astonished at the cruelty of people on the internet, Charlotte, that you post a little clip of you coming on GB News and talking about your husband, and immediately it gets labelled as misinformation, and there's supposed fact-checkers say it's not true, as if they've gone round to your house, knocked on your door, and confirmed that you are a widow. How do you feel about the way the media and social media have reacted to this?
Well, I think it's such an astonishing thing to say, to see misinformation when it's the truth. I mean, you can't, and you can't say anything. You can't, like, there's no one to speak to about why this little banner is here. Why does it say it? Who is putting this here? I can give you his death certificate if you would like to see it. You know, it's not misinformation.
What do you think of that, Dan? Because it's adding literal insult to injury. You lose your husband, you're bringing up two, there's that heartbreaking picture that's on your Twitter feed of your little boy touching his father's coffin, and there's all these people scoffing and claiming that this is just some anti-vax conspiracy theory.
I mean, I think it's despicable. I think it's utterly despicable. I think big tech have been a massive issue throughout this entire pandemic, but I'm sorry, you cannot literally use the word anti-vax about any human being in this room because the point is they are vaccine injured. They listen to the government. Mm-hmm. They listen to the experts. They listen to Facebook. They listen to Elmo on Sesame Street. They listen to all of these people who said, take the vaccine. There is no risk. Mm-hmm. They are not anti-vaxxers. They are victims of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an important way to put it because as you were saying, Anne, he's 32. He has no medical reason to take it. Yeah. He took it, as you said, to protect, because if you're a doctor, you've got random people coming in and out of your office all day. So he took it so that he wasn't a threat to them. And it turns out that's rubbish. The triple vaccinated are infecting each other back and forth.
Yes.
I mean, this must be really painful, Charlotte, that he died because of a medical procedure he never needed to take.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think every day that had he waited until his age group, AstraZeneca would have been pulled. It was pulled for under 30s and it was pulled for under 40s. And the only reason he had it so soon was because he was a doctor. So had he been unemployed, he would still be here.
Yeah.
But of course, Sajid Javid did threaten, didn't he, to take jobs away from anyone working in the NHS who refused to have the vaccine. Mm-hmm.
Again, this is unprecedented that people are being asked to take a medication simply in order to remain in employment. And it's a terrible business. Let's just get a quick reaction. Does anyone want to say anything about what Charlotte and Anne and Dan have been saying so far? We have. How about Claire? Let's go to Claire.
Sorry.
No. Claire, if you can, Claire is tearing up. She's on Twitter every day, trying to do something for not just herself, but for all the other victims of this thing. And she gets abused on Twitter by no-name warriors, you know, people who think they're super courageous because they got some fake-o pseudonym. And they're berating her on Twitter as a conspiracy theorist. We're going to come back. Welcome back to our special with victims of the vaccine, plus one of their dogs. That dog with the menacing growl is Sugar, and Sugar is an Egyptian street dog. So she is actually growling in Arabic. We don't want to make too much of that because they'll put her on the no-fly list or something. And she's a perfectly nice dog from the streets of Cairo. Let us meet two more victims of the vaccine. Claire Hibbs, you have seen on our show before, and Leanne Tomlin, you have not. Leanne, who is that with you there?
This is my stepmom, Lusa Tabra.
And Lucy lived in Leicester and took the vaccine.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
She had the vaccine in March last year. It was about 10 days after she started to get a bit of a headache. She went to the doctors and they told her that it was kidney stones because she had stomach pains. They said, it's kidney stones. They sent her home with some painkillers. A day or two later, my dad came home from work after a night shift and she could barely stand up. I FaceTimed her and she showed me her gums. They were turning black. Obviously, we knew that something wasn't right, and my dad rushed her to our local hospital, where he wasn't allowed to go in with her because of COVID restrictions. That was the last time that he seen her properly. She was there for about 10 days, eight days, and then she got to another hospital for a craniectomy, where they relieved pressure on the brain, and they couldn't do anything to save her.
And all this time she was alone
because
of the COVID restrictions, so nobody could see her. Yeah. Now, you have a much, well, I shouldn't say that, it's a bit ungallant, but you have a younger sibling.
Yeah, he's 6 years old, Orson.
A 6-year-old boy who lost his mum. And how old was Lucy?
47.
47.
Yeah.
Do you... Are you resentful of the fact that her initial trip to hospital, they just sloughed her off and sent her home?
Yeah, I'm really angry about it. She spent her last 10 days of her life alone, and I can only imagine absolutely terrified and scared and didn't understand what was going on. We spoke to her a few times over FaceTime, but she couldn't really hold the phone up herself, and now she used to sit with her. I remember my dad ringing me, I think it was on the Wednesday. He rang me and said that he'd spoke to her, and it was as if she was saying goodbye. She knew something wasn't right. And that was, I think that was the last time that he spoke to her at all. I think on the Wednesday night, or the Thursday, was when she had the major stroke, and she never woke up from that.
It's a terrible thing for your poor 6-year-old brother, who they don't understand death at that age. They only feel the absence. They can't quite comprehend forever and eternity and the fact that his mum isn't coming home. It's a terrible business. But Claire, I follow you on Twitter. You are a feisty tweeter in part because you're regularly insulted by people who don't think this is a real phenomenon.
Yeah.
And in fact, if it weren't for those of you who do tweet, there would be hundreds of thousands, millions around the world living in isolation thinking, this is just happening to me, it's a freak one-off. In fact, because of people like you tweeting about it and Leanne tweeting about it, we understand that it's a global phenomenon.
Yeah, I wasn't on Twitter before this happened. I didn't even know how to use Twitter. I didn't understand it at all. I was just Facebook. I don't understand Instagram. I just don't get it.
Well, you understand it now because they're out there insulting you, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, are you astonished that even when you say, I'm injured by this, when Leanne says, you know, I've got a grieving 6-year-old brother, these kind of cyber warriors still insist on kind of trashing
you all
the time.
They're horrible. They're just horrible people. Some of the comments, I think we had one yesterday, was it, on one of our posts? We had one yesterday, just and it literally just said fake news, and it was advertising this, and they just replied fake news and sort of tagging us into their little army of people that insult us. And Twitter is our only, or was up until us coming onto GB News, Twitter was our only platform to actually get any recognition or get heard. Facebook just cancel everything. They delete everything. And we had a conversation the other day in the VIP group, and we actually said, if it wasn't for Twitter, nobody would know about these deaths or these injuries, because it's the only place it's actually spoken about. So because of the media and the ignorance and the way we're completely censored, if it wasn't for Twitter or anybody that doesn't go on Twitter, it's... they don't know about
it. Well, no, since we did the first interviews with Vicky and Charlotte all those weeks ago, I was astonished at the number of emails we got from people who aren't on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so they thought, oh, well, I was just told my injury was a freak one-off. Yeah. It's one in 30 million. And now I realize there's all these other people out there. Neil Oliver is with us. Neil, you know from Saturday nights here on GB News and from those terrific monologues that Neil does, including one where he said that increasingly in the West, we're in abusive relationships with our own government. There's an element of that in this, Neil, isn't it? In that we have people who have been, who basically took the government's advice, their lives are wrecked, and they can't get anybody in government to return their calls.
It feels like a complete dereliction of duty. It feels like a complete inversion of what ought to be the case. Stories like Leanne's, stories like Claire's, all the stories that we've been listening to on and off camera, in a sane, compassionate world, all the forces of good would mobilise to support and help in the aftermath of this. Your stories would be listened to, you would be taken seriously, and there would be concrete efforts made to make good. Although, you know, it's too late. It's too late in many ways, but there would be an honest acknowledgement of it. What it feels, this inversion that I'm talking about, is it feels as though the powers that be have mobilised to protect pharma. The intention has been to let these people, these good people, be sacrificed on the altar of this global vaccine programme. And that in order to facilitate that, these stories have to be swept under the carpet. They have to be disregarded. And out in the wider environment of social media, they have to be ridiculed and dismissed. That is through the looking glass. That is completely wrong. And that should that should trigger all of us. In all of us, it should trigger that feeling of the difference between right and wrong. And what is being done here for these people and uncounted thousands, if not millions of people around the world, is plain wrong.
Well, you know, you make a good point there. We were told at the start of the COVID that this is an extraordinary situation, that it's like being at war. And in war, we've all got to be one community and think of the greater good, because we're all in this together. So we're all in this together. And then it goes horribly wrong for the people in this room, and then suddenly we're not in this together, and you guys are frosted out, and you can't get hold of anybody at the Department of Health, and you fill in a form on a website, and you don't hear anything back for 18 months. How many of you share Leanne's feelings of bitterness and anger about what has happened in the last year and a half? Yep.
At first, I'm a GBS sufferer, so obviously
that's Guillain-Barré syndrome. Yeah.
Yes, and I count myself probably lucky to be here. Obviously, people have gone through worse than I have, and at first, when I went in hospital, it was discarded that it was the vaccine. It wasn't the vaccine at all. The doctors were saying it wasn't the vaccine. It could be something else.
So that even the NHS are protecting the official narrative.
Yes.
That there's nothing wrong.
That's what I felt. when I first went to hospital, that's exactly what I felt.
But you know, when you call it GBS, Guillain-Barré syndrome was so rare yep. that nobody spoke of it as an acronym. And now we have clusters of cases just showing up in small hospitals. So the government has, and all these NHS trusts, however many there are across the country, they're all taking these numbers and they're all going to some central database in London.
Yeah.
They know about this. Why aren't they talking about it?
I don't know. I was told that it was a rare case, but my wife was doing all the information on the internet and everything else and looking on the Lancet, and, you know, government papers, and finding out that the cases were rising.
Yeah.
And I knew there was a guy opposite me who had also got GBS as well, but they wouldn't tell me.
So you're in this thing that shows up once every few years.
Once every
average,
few years, that's what I was told.
And they're getting multiple cases simultaneously,
yeah.
but they're still insisting it's nothing to do with the vaccine.
Yeah.
That's has anyone had, I mean, everyone, we're supposed to bang saucepans for the NHS, but all the stories I hear of going to a hospital, being sloughed off, being told it's nothing to do with the vaccine, being sent home, take two aspirin, and if it doesn't clear up, get back to us. Are there other people who have been poorly treated by the NHS in this, where the doctors did not respond well to it?
2 weeks,
I
struggled to get recognised by my doctors. I was ringing them after I had my vaccine. I had numerous side effects pretty much straight on, right within the first few hours, crashing headaches. I couldn't think. My head was just like a solid block, and they just wouldn't listen to me. They said, don't worry about it, it's just normal side effects. And every couple of days I'd ring in, the same thing. And at some point I thought it must end. But they just still wouldn't listen, and they said... And that they rolled into the second week, and they we'll get you in, we'll talk, we'll get somebody to check you over. That didn't happen. And then I had the same thing again, just keep ringing back. And then 2 weeks to the day I'd had my vaccine, I was in desperation. I'd lost all consciousness of how serious my ill I was. I couldn't talk, I was stumbling. And my doctor spoke to me on the phone, and he said, well, I need to see you now. You sound that serious on the phone, I need to see you now. And I jumped into my car, and without awareness of how bad I was, I just jumped into my car and got there somehow. And they called the ambulance within seconds of seeing me. Because I couldn't walk down the corridor to his office. He just saw me stumbling.
That's just extraordinary. The point to remember here is that they know who's suffering from what in each hospital. The Office of National Statistics has become very selective about which statistics it releases. The UK Health Security Agency has become very selective about what statistics it releases. But they know the numbers on things like Guillain-Barré syndrome and myocarditis and everything else. And they're not releasing them to us. They're very selective in what numbers they are releasing. So the bureaucracy is part of the problem here too, because they prioritize protecting the narrative over protecting you. Coming up, we're going to talk to a man who has a very rare distinction in the United Kingdom and actually around much of the world too. He is the only MP who has shown any energy in trying to do something about the victims of the vaccine. That is Sir Christopher Choate, and he will join us in just a moment. That is Sugar. We might as well find out what the other dog is called,
Scully.
Vicky. This is Scully, and this is Vicky Spit. And Vicky has a unique distinction. She is the first person in the United Kingdom to have been informed that the government will compensate her for the loss of her loved one, £120,000. It isn't a lot of money, but the important thing is that the government has acknowledged that the COVID vaccines can kill. Tell us a bit about Zeon, Vicky, because I said, I think, to Dan Wooten the other night that Zeon was a rocker. And he played the rock music, and I said his music was a bit hardcore for my effete, sissy, easy-listening tastes. But that I should have really have said that, because you two were awfully good. You played bass, your band went all over the continent, and you had fans, and those fans miss Zeon.
They do. Something that really struck me after I sort of let people know what happened was the response from people who, the fans we'd had over years and people that he'd been in touch with. I had so many messages from people saying things that I didn't know that he'd done. Because he was a big advocate for helping people with depression and anti-bullying. So people were messaging, he helped me, he spent hours talking to me. He didn't have to, he was so nice. And that was just, you know, these private messages that you're sending to people to help them through troubled times.
Yeah, no, I know him only from the things you've written about him, and it's clear that he touched a lot of people, he made a difference in their lives, and you remember the chronology, because you posted a few weeks back to mark the anniversary of the day he left the house to go off and get the vaccine because he thought it was the responsible thing to do.
Yeah, he was ridiculously healthy. You know, he exercised every day, he didn't drink, he didn't smoke. He ate crazily healthily, and he was just concerned that he might potentially give the virus to someone who wasn't healthy, who might be damaged by it, and he definitely couldn't live with the idea of hurting someone else or killing potentially someone else. And at the time, we were under the impression that the vaccines would prevent you getting and spreading the disease.
Now, you said something I thought was absolutely astonishing. You'd set a date to be married.
Yes.
And then the COVID happened and the lockdown happened and they say, oh, no, you can only have whatever it was, 4-7 people at you. So you thought, okay, well, we'll postpone it. And you postponed it and he died. And then the government told you, oh, no, you can't have any bereavement money because you weren't actually married to him, even though it's the government's actions that were the reason you were not married.
That is very true. I sort of became aware of that initially within the first few weeks of Z dying, because a few people had told me there's a bereavement payment, oh, you're not eligible for it. And I didn't really think further than that, because the first few months, as any of these widows who will tell you, you cannot think straight, you can't take anything in. And it was only recently, the last few days, I sort of thought about that and thought, well, surely, as I can prove, we had registered to be married, we'd given notice, you know, we had the registry office booked, all our family were going to come. And then you could show that lockdown prevented that happening. Surely there would be some allowance for that. And I'm told there isn't. And I'm told there is no way of appeal. Now, this isn't a vaccine issue. And this is not just a me issue. This is a lockdown issue, which affects anyone in that situation. And just to take it a little bit further, if you take into consideration universal credit, for example, if you cohabit with a partner as if married, it affects your ability to receive universal credit.
Right.
If said partner who you live with as if you are married dies, it's not as if you're married anymore. You don't get anything. And that seems like a gross hypocrisy to me. And that needs addressing.
This is an extraordinary situation. You close down the country. So someone, and actually this is of particular relevance to Boris Johnson, who is the first prime minister to live at number 10 Downing Street with his better half, without benefit of clergy, as we used to say. So Boris Johnson, of all people, should not be allowing discrimination on this basis, given his own particular circumstances. As I said, the state and the media are just adding literal insult to the injury that Vicky and others have suffered. The only MP who has shown any interest in doing anything about this and doing anything for these people is Sir Christopher Chope. And I have to say that clip of yours when you were asking a question in the House of Commons and then for some reason you got slapped down by that ghastly speaker. It's been a while since I've followed speakers of the House of Commons, so I'm shocked to find he doesn't have his wig on. Get his wig on. We're showing the clip and here's that awful wigless speaker then slapping you down and saying, well, now, why did he do that? He said, and he appeared to laugh.
Well, actually, the speaker was absolutely right. It was a fair cop because I was trying to exploit a question which was dealing with the issue of people who had suffered as a result of the contaminated blood scandal and trying to draw an analogy between that and the people who were being... who has suffered as a result of COVID vaccine damage, and going to suggest that I hope they weren't going to have to wait for 20 to 30 years in order for the government to face up to the reality.
Yeah.
And actually, the supplementary question I was putting, the speaker, correctly in my view, ruled to be out of order. And so there was no love. No, I wasn't insulted by him, but it was interpreted as being a restriction upon my freedom. But actually, the speaker has been very good in providing me with an adjournment debate which he chose on this subject and supporting me in other ways in the House on trying to ensure that this minority issue is brought to the public's attention and is actually helps me put questions to the Department of Health, the ministers, and try to get them to answer them. So please don't criticise Speaker Hoyle. He's a very different speaker from the previous speaker.
Oh, yeah, no. And the first wigless speaker.
He may not wear a wig always, but he does quite often dress for the part.
Well, let me ask you this then. Why does it appear that you are so lonely in your support for doing something for these people? Why are there not Labour and Scottish Nationalists and DUP and people in all parties recognising? Why is it you and hardly anybody else?
Well, that's a good question, and I wish I could provide the answer. All I can say is that more colleagues are beginning to wake up to the reality of what's happened. And as a result of that, I've now got 12 sponsors for my private members bill, which is coming up again for second reading on 16th of September. I've got cross-party support and I'm going to launch an all-party parliamentary group on this topic. And so I think the word is spreading more people are coming to support me. But I think a lot of colleagues were frightened off because they were led to believe that the vaccines were absolutely safe. And they were going along with the idea that anybody who was complaining was probably mentally ill, mad anti-vaxxer,
and certainly conspiracy theorists,
and all the rest. I'm afraid that I think that, but it's disappointing to me because the privilege of being a member of parliament is actually to be able to stand up against the government on behalf of your constituents, and too few of my colleagues have been doing that.
We don't need to introduce Michelle Dewberry because you see her every night on GB News at 6 p.m. And Michelle has had Vicky on the show and did a much better job than that idiot at Talk Radio, who's whatever he's called, whose name escapes me. But Michelle, when did this first strike you as becoming an issue?
I think for me, It's been on my radar for quite a while. I can't explain why. It's just instinctively, I knew that there were people that were struggling, that were suffering and not being heard. And I don't like injustice. And I think the way that these people and many other people have been treated is a national shame. I think it is a disgrace. They were asked, as we all were, to have this treatment, vaccine, whatever you want to call it, to have these vaccines. And when it went wrong for people, they were completely abandoned. And if that wasn't bad enough, Mark, not only were they abandoned, they were called names, they were abused, they were disbelieved, they were mocked. And I cannot imagine what it must feel like to have your life irreversibly changed for something that you thought was the right thing to do. and then basically to be ostracised. And my heart breaks for people here that's been affected, beyond here that's been affected. And it's simply wrong. I think it's appalling how many people want to turn a blind eye, and they do. Mm. I've had huge abuse for even daring Mark to talk about, well, there are people that have been harmed. And then what people immediately do is, well, how many? The vaccines have saved millions of lives. How many? And my answer to that is always the same. It's irrelevant how many, because even if it's one person dying, being made disabled, having their life altered, that is one person too many. And the work that you do, Christopher, I really respect, because it is difficult to put yourself out there and be first to do these kind of things. But what this whole process needs, Mark, is transparency. Yeah. This whole kind of vaccine damage payment scheme, the number of people that are applying, it's all opaque. Yeah. And that's wrong.
No, that's true. And the Office of National Statistics and other people need to clean up their act. But Michelle made a critical point there, that even if it was only one, I mean, these are governments around the world who have had targets of zero COVID. So zero COVID is vital. It's still the policy in China, and Australia only abandoned it a few weeks ago. So one case of COVID is too many, but over 2,000 vaccine deaths officially in the UK is apparently just peripheral and unimportant. And there have already been more deaths and more injuries from these vaccines than from all previous vaccines. It's a public policy scandal. It's a public health scandal. And the government has to completely change so that all these propagandists who just follow the media just finally shape up on this. What is this? Explain what this is.
In the best way that we could think.
Okay. Thank you very much. Charlotte has given Mark and everyone at GB News, so you have to have a slice of this too, Michelle. To Mark and everyone at GB News, it's a ginger growler cake.
Oh, I love
named that. In honour of the Deputy Leader of Her Majesty's Loyal Opposition. Thank you so much for that, Charlotte. I'm glad to see you are in good spirits despite the hell you have been through.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us here. We are going to stay on this story. It is a public health scandal, and we wish you all the best, and we thank you so much. From all of us here, good night.
Absolutely disgusted the way it's been covered up. It is extremely upsetting. Our family members have died and been severely injured. Families have been ruined.
Every MP stood and said to get your vaccine. Everyone knows it's affecting every single person on the planet. Why are we ignoring this?
I was told by the haematologist that he is possibly the first to die in the UK. I think that the government have just left us and everyone else to it.
How can our cases be weak when you have a death certificate?
So many people don't report it, or don't know how to even. People are dropping like flies.
They can't keep killing people. And by they, Jules means the government.